Hello, Blind Quote Tech listeners and supporters. This is David John Chung, also known as Monsieur Maranatha, recording from LA, California. And by the way, I'm not the actual host of this program. So, without further ado, let's introduce our host for this program. From Louisiana, with the city being unnamed, which I don't know at the moment at least. Here is the host of this podcast, Monsieur Hayden Presley.
Hello, everyone at Blind Cool Tech, and welcome to my first ever podcast. I would like to thank Monsieur Maranatha for being on with me. And today we have an interesting topic for you guys. I hope it will be interesting anyway. David and I are both pretty into math, I'd say. And you've got one. Math is one of the subjects in school where you're going to find that there's going to be a lot of ups and downs everywhere. And we're kind of just tonight going to be discussing math from a visually impaired standpoint. How do you know, kind of how to approach math from a visually impaired standpoint? Because there are various considerations that you do need to take into account when discussing this subject. Because if we, of course, I think everyone knows that math is fairly dynamic. We've got everything from 2x equals 6 to, I don't know, find the area of the graph bounded by the region, find the area of the region bounded by the graphs of y equals 5x squared plus 3 over x and y equals 17x cubed minus 3x squared plus 5. And I'm not going to solve that for you. But the point is, math has a fairly large scope in terms of subject matter. I'm going to pass this over to David to kind of get this discussion rolling.
Thank you very much, Monsieur Presley. To begin with, I want to first of all start by mentioning that as blind people, we do not learn mathematics the same way that those people with working eyeballs do. For instance, some of the people who are sighted use the vertical addition slash subtraction method. But for me, I don't like that method. I always like to add, subtract, multiply, and divide horizontally. What about you, Hayden?
Yeah, same here. In school, I was forced to do that. Unfortunately, I was forced to set up all my problems vertically, and I was forced to do that. But David and I are both number crunchers, you know. If I gave him like 14 times 28 times 20, which I happen to have solved already, he could probably figure that out. Fairly short order.
Probably can.
Yeah. Maybe you can give us an answer by the end of the podcast.
Well, okay, let's move on here.
Yes.
What about this, Hayden? I know that geometry is a very difficult subject for those who are visually impaired because there are many things that we have to visualize. For instance, the way that we visualize things might be totally different from those perspective of the sighted person. So how do you tackle geometry?
The way that you tackle geometry, and the thing is that you've got to, as much as possible, without using this as a crutch, but you realize that for most of us in school that are taking anything like this, you've got some kind of visually impaired program at your disposal, and you really do need to take advantage of that as much as possible for this. In truth, geometry is not as bad in high school as it is in middle school, mainly because if you're an algebra person like myself, and David here as well, we're both also calculus people, but that's another subject. But if you're an algebra person, it's going to be a lot easier because in middle school, at least what I found, is that you're going to get a shape. And they're going to say, find the area of quadrilateral WXYZ, and it's going to be some kind of maybe concave, irregular, quadrilateral, and it's going to have a bunch of square units all over the place. Well, how do you figure that? I think David will agree with me that it's very difficult, because not only do you sometimes have triangles, but sometimes you're going to have like fractions of triangles. Now, what happens a lot is when you get to high school, you do start using a lot more formulae, shall we say, to calculate area and such.
And by the way, to be more technical, that postulate or axiom that you're talking about is called the area addition axiom, because when you have a region...
That's actually the area addition postulate, which states that the area of an irregular region are the sum of its of the areas of its non-overlapping regular parts.
However, I don't like that word postulate. It's too elementary. I like that word. I like the word axiom better. It's more college level. You know what I mean.
However, axiom is a word that refers to a law based off of numeric operations, not geometric operations.
It is funny because I know that postulate and axiom has been used interchangeably in my textbook, at least that I'm concerned. Yeah. So, in terms of the word postulate, I think, this is high school word, you know? It's not that fancy. Yeah. So, I always try to stick to the fancy stuff, you know?
Yeah, I like axiom too, but the thing about it is if you're ending up with like words like postulate, theorem, property, and definition, in which you have to realize what those things extend to. But
Go ahead. Okay. I'm sorry.
Yes. Another consideration is solids or polyhedral figures. And polyhedral figures, for me, have always been about the worst part of geometry. For those of you who haven't taken this, there is something called a isometric drawing, where they will...
Oh, that's a nightmare.
And they just place a bunch of dots on a page, and they make you like connect the dots, okay? And then they'll ask you, which of these figures represents the front of this figure? And here's the fun part. They don't give you a regular polyhedron. No. They decide they're going to give you some crazy, irregular, three-dimensional shape that you'll not find in any geometry textbook because it's not listed by name.
Yeah, speaking about solids and doing all that junk in a two-dimensional paper is not easy. But take heart, Monsieur Presley, for if you study mathematics in college level, and once you get into linear algebra, sighted people will also have to deal with the same problem. For we will have to eventually learn to visualize not only 3D, but 4th and higher dimensional shapes.
You will often be working with shapes up to possibly 10 dimensions, which is perfectly theoretical. And since I'm not a quantum physicist, I don't believe there's a 4th dimension in this universe, much less a 10th, but I digress. You really have to be careful with that. You will end up, and then if you get to like Calc 3, you're going to end up working with three-dimensional equations. You're going to find the partial derivative, and you're going to be working with vectors and lines and surfaces and all kinds of fun stuff. And you will end up grabbing
in terms
those.
Of Calculus 3, you will also deal with not only the x, y, and z coordinate axis, you will also have to deal with spherical and other types of coordinate systems, which are, man, crazy.
I'd like to touch on such mathematics as geometry, and if you could give us some kind of general disadvantage that would really apply to all people, visually impaired and sighted alike.
Well, because speaking about solid geometry, just like you have mentioned, even those people who have sight have difficulty with 3-dimensional shapes drawn in 2D style because they're not used to 2Ds, you know, figures that are actually 3D.
Now, some of us will say that there are 2D objects in this world. There actually aren't, because the definition of a plane, which would be the container for 2D object, is an object with zero thickness. So, if you can find if you can find something for me that is 0.00000000 micrometers thick, show me. zero of any unit thick, show me. But even that doesn't make it easy to show a cube in lines. Now, actually, a cube is fairly easy to see, but certain figures are not. Let's start getting into something like maybe a decagonal pyramid or something. That has to be extremely difficult to see. Something like
that's correct, because the base of that figure
is 10 sides.
If I heard you properly, has 10 sides.
That's correct.
And then you have to also imagine how many faces it has and all that using Euler's theorem. Oh my goodness.
Yes. Also, something that you should be aware of is the all-popular proof. I don't know anyone who likes these things.
Well, for me, I am into proofs except the ones that you do not like. I don't like two-column proof. I'm into paragraph proofs. Because eventually, when you go up to Algebra 2 or Calculus even, you're going to have to begin to talk about why you got that solution. I am into paragraph proofs because all of my notes that I have taken so far in mathematics are in paragraph style format.
Now, of course, the ironic thing about it is that we are only allowed to do, we will only be writing two column proofs. We will not be writing paragraph proofs, and thank goodness we will not be writing flow proofs.
Oh man, those are crazy.
Now, the thing about a proof is that if you have certain teachers, and I think that's going to happen a lot, if you start putting the word axiom where you mean postulate, or theorem where you mean theorem, or property where you mean definition, you're going to get in a lot of trouble. Because mm-hmm. there are a lot of different keywords, and you do need to remember them, because the alternative is you're going to have to write out everything. For instance, let's take the SSS theorem, which states that if three sides of two triangles are congruent, if we've got two triangles, say triangle ABC, triangle DEF, AB is congruent to DE, BC is congruent to EF, CA is congruent to FD, then both triangles are congruent. Okay, that's great. So let's say we're proving two triangles congruent. And actually, the result would be SSS, but let's just say that that was somehow in our proof somewhere. Can you imagine writing that out several times? But again, the disadvantage to trying to remember them is that you're going to possibly end up making mistakes unless you remember them. I'd like to move on to another subject of mathematics where things get a little bit hairy. And I don't know if David here has the same problems, but something to be aware of are sometimes you're going to find some inordinately large sets of numbers that you're going to need to operate on in word problem form. Now, don't get me wrong. Like I said earlier, I'm a number cruncher. But if I've got, 10 different factors that I've got to plug into some kind of formula and show out all my work, I am going to forget one or two numbers here and there. And sometimes I've been known to write the incorrect number and end up with a completely wrong solution because of that. And this happens a lot in chemistry, if you're going into chemistry, because you're going to have such lovely things as the gas laws and other dimensional analysis type problems like that, where you're going to have to show out all that business and make sure you keep all your numbers in order.
And you have to also take into account the constant of the mole, which is 6.02 times 10 to the 23, I think.
Yeah. However, that doesn't come into... That doesn't come into play until you get into a little bit more advanced chemistry, but you're correct. It is 6.02 times 10 to the 23, which is an incredibly large number. In fact, I don't believe there's even a mole of water on this Earth. However, that's another story. It's pretty crazy.
Anyway, let's move on here, and I want to direct Hayden's attention to graphs.
Yes, the all-loving graph. Every blind person loves to read line graphs and bar graphs and histograms. And
well, you know what? Let's do this. Let's not do bar, line, histogram. Let's take it up a notch. Let's do sines, cosines, and tangents. How about those?
Those are fun. Man. Those are fun. If you're gonna...
See, many blind people say, how in the world do you tackle graphs like that? I mean, maybe you can tackle linear functions, absolute value functions, parabolas, because those are easy. But how do you tackle something like, well, how do you tackle something like, for example, exponential, logarithmic, natural log, radical functions, polynomial, trig functions, inverse trig, how do you tackle all those?
Right, well, you can graph all that business too. You can put all that on a graph and you can get pretty crazy with it too.
And for me, here's what I did. I was very fortunate. I had a teacher, when we would learn a new graph, for instance, let's say we're learning the exponential graph. Let's say the function was what? F of x is equal to 2 to the x. He would take my hand and draw the x and y axis, and then he would draw the shape of the graph for me, the basic shape of each graph on my hand. And for me, that helped a lot, because once something is drawn into my hand, I have that memory stuck in my brain. So I can manipulate that basic function to accommodate all sorts of equations. For instance, I could basically take that y equals 2 to the x, and then I could graph, for instance, y is equal to 1/3 times 2 to the x minus 3 plus 5, for instance, because I know what all those constants do, because the 1/3 basically, excuse me, the 1/3 makes the graph wider, like parabolas. The 3 inside the parentheses shifts the graph 3 units to the right, and the minus 5 brings the graph down 5 units. And also that is the horizontal asymptote of the graph y equals 2 to the x.
And
so once you have the basic shapes of the graph down, then you can graph more advanced things.
And the thing about this is that it all depends on the teacher, because you can be certified as a teacher and not be the best. It just really depends.
Mm-hmm. If you have and also, the other tip that I would also want to recommend is to try to write out and describe the shape of the graph in words so that you can have it in your mind. So for instance,
if you have to like use directions, it's probably not a good idea to do, you know, go north this many units then come back this many units this way, because
not like that.
Idea to do that. So I'd recommend you not try that. It might
what
work,
I mean is but... for instance, you take for instance the graph of f of x equals to tangent of x. What I would do in my notes, in my honors pre-calc notes, I have this down. I said, this graph looks like, for me at least this works, this graph has two half parabolas connect to each other in a vertical shape fashion. And the graph starts at the third quadrant, way, 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 way below the x-axis, and then it climbs in a parabolic pattern, crosses the origin, and then it climbs to the other asymptote. Oh, I forgot. There are two vertical asymptotes in the tangent function, one at x equals negative pi over 2, and the other one at x equals pi over 2. So
all kinds
once
of
you
fun
have
radian
these...
measurements are related to the unit circle and some other trigonometric garbage that we won't go
right.
into.
Right, although I don't recommend you to use the unit circle, because that's utter garbage. I use the reference triangle method. It's better.
Yeah, you really... I'm trying to really think when a good time to use the unit circle would be. I can't really think of anything right now.
The only time that the unit circle is useful is when you're trying to find the value of the six trigonometric functions of angles like 90 degrees, 180 degrees, 270 degrees, etc.
And
otherwise,
unfortunately, as a little bit of trivia, they're finding, like, if I gave you the sine of 5 to find, you actually can't find that. It's unfortunate.
Sine of what?
Sine of 5. Sine of
radians, you mean, right?
What?
You mean sine of 5 radians, right?
I don't know. Just like the number 5, you could really have it as 5 degrees or 5 radians.
Because if you say sine of 5, in standard convention, it's radians.
Yeah. Unfortunately, however, those numbers can't actually be known by any formula. Sometimes you just have to either memorize them or punch in your calculator, you know, sign of whatever you've got there.
Correct.
You know, depending on what you've got.
Now, Hayden, let me ask you this about graphs. How do you tackle graphs, like very complex ones? What do you do?
It's important to understand the context of the graph itself, and you need to make sure you understand what the problem is. I find a lot of times that graphs tend to be related to word problems in some way, and you need to make sure that, like I said, you understand what this graph is about, because I can assure you that if you're going to go into some kind of graph, and it doesn't even have to be like a graph of some kind of conic section or like some kind of graph of a trig function or some kind of three-dimensional graph or an equation, maybe, I don't know, 1/3 x plus 5y squared over 5 pi to the x minus 3z or some crazy equation like that. It could be as simple as a scatter plot, which, in all truth, I don't know about David, but I've had infinite trouble with those. In my mind, and maybe some of you like this, but statistics, in my mind, is really not always the best branch of math to go into if you don't have to. I'm not going to necessarily discourage anyone from taking it, but I can tell you now that if you're not a graph person, I recommend you not take statistics. That's going to be your entire school year.
Yeah, because when you take stats, you have to deal with graphs, and you have to know about the center of norm of the graph and all that mess. And if you cannot read graphs properly, if you don't have the basic foundations in graph reading, you're going to be paying a huge price.
Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of business related to that. And then we've got all kinds of different averages. We've got your range. We've got all kinds of operations with data sets, which aren't really too bad so long as you know what they are. But your graphs are what's going to kill you that in stats. In all truth, I'd like to ask David about algebra. Algebra really isn't that bad. I think that for most visually impaired people, algebra is going to be one of your easiest years.
One or two. It depends.
Yeah. Two will get a little bit more technical, or let's say graphy, to coin a new turn of phrase.
Graphy.
Graphy, because you are going to start discussing conic sections. You're going to have your parabolas and ellipses and all kinds of fun stuff like that. And, you know, let's start graphing exponential equations. You'll have fun with that too, I'm sure.
How about logs?
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's fun. Algebra 1, though, is going to be fairly easy throughout the whole thing. If you get to graphing quadratics that year, I'm sorry to say that's probably not going to be the case, because there go your parabolas. But most of, you know, solving for slope and linear equations and factoring simple trinomials and simplifying polynomials, that's really not too bad.
And, you know, to be honest, Algebra 1 is very tedious when you get used to it. Because, for instance, take a look at finding the equation of a line in standard form. My goodness, it gets tedious.
Yeah, AX plus BY equals C is never really a practical thing to work with unless you're solving for a system of linear equations. That's the only time I can see that it's advantageous to do that. And you're going to notice that you're going to use the same principles over and over again throughout your Algebra 1 year without really building too much. You know, you start out with some simple equations, you know, 3x equals 9 and x equals 3, 5x equals 25, x equals 5, and so on and so forth. And then you're going to find slope. Okay, so there we go back to simple elementary. Subtract some numbers, then divide them. Then we decide we're going to find some linear stuff. Okay, let's continue to plug some stuff into formulas. And let's just solve for equations on both sides of the equal sign. It's all the same thing, really.
Exactly. Once you know how to solve basic equations, Algebra 1 gets very, very tedious and simple.
Now,
for me, honestly, I don't like tedious stuff. I like complicated mathematics, where you have to think a little bit.
And the thing about tedious mathematics is that you usually get 500 problems of said tedious mathematics, and you have to show your work for every problem of said tedious mathematics, and they decide to get fancy on this problem or that problem, and you just have to show more work to come up with a very simple answer that's pointless in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Algebra 2, we'll start having, like we said, we'll start having a little more fun there, I think. Because you will start doing things like, you know, you'll learn you'll get introduced to logarithms, you're going to start getting, you're going to start seeing... your log properties, then you'll have exponential equations, you're going to have partial fraction decomposition, you're going to have all your conic sections, you're going to have matrices, you're going to have all kinds of fun stuff. And algebra 2, you're going to start getting into all kinds of different ways of factoring polynomials and some other things. Which is kind of fun.
In terms of factoring in Algebra 2, you're going to actually start to see factoring differences of two cubes, mind you.
Yeah.
Those are fun, by the way.
Yeah, I forget the exact formula, but I know it's like...
It's quantity A minus B times A squared plus AB plus B squared.
Yeah, and quantity A minus B is the quantities without cubes. So if we had something like... If we were factoring, say, 1 minus X cubed... something like that. Then you'd have, 1 minus x times,
the quantity of 1 plus x squared.
Right. Yeah, there's all kinds of different ways of factoring. And that's something else that can get pretty fancy if you're not careful. You'll also get into multiplying and dividing complex polynomials. So let's say we've got 30x plus 25 minus 20 plus 47x squared over 10x cubed minus 5x squared plus 5x minus 7. That is dividable. That is divisible. I can't solve it right off the top of my head, but you can divide that. The principle is long division, but you're going to have to get used to a few more new concepts in order for that to start working.
And if you think that is bad, wait till you get to simplifying complex fractions. My goodness, those are fun. That's like, for instance, you have multiple fractions in either the numerator or the denominator.
Yeah,
so, for instance, a complex fraction might be...
You can have like 1/2 thirds or something, you know.
Yep.
Then you have hypercomplex fractions. And I believe, if I'm recalling correctly, that means you've got a complex fraction in the numerator and a complex fraction in the denominator. Those are fun.
That's madness.
But yeah, try adding that together. Let's say I have 1/2, 1/3, 1/4, 1/7. I guess that's how you'd say that. Those are really hard to say. And add that to something, you will find that's pretty difficult to add. Another thing we should really... I'd like to discuss Braille in terms of mathematics, because there are some big considerations. I think a lot of us are taught that Nemeth code is basically just the numbers in lower cell notation. But there is so much more to Nemeth code than just your numbers. There is so much more. And actually, what reminded me of that was the discussion of complex and hypercomplex fractions, because there are, geometry is pretty bad in terms of that. If I gave you some symbol ABC, some symbol DEF, find X. If you didn't know that, say, this was the measure of angle ABC is congruent to the measure of angle DEF, find X, I assure you, you'd be here all day trying to figure it out. So it's important, and I think David can agree here with me, it is important that you learn Nemeth code. If you do not, it's going to come back to haunt you, I can assure you.
That's correct.
That's correct. Oui, ça c'est correct.
By the way, that's my little French little accent.
Yeah, il est pas terrible. Il est pas terrible. Tu dois lui excuser.
Speaking about the French accent, Hayden, it's funny because I have a lecture series from MIT that goes through multivariable calculus, and this professor is from France, and every single time he says the word correct, he goes, "That's correct."
And you know, I've been trying to get the YouTube address to that, and David hasn't given it to me, because David and I actually haven't yet taken calculus, per se. But we've both dabbled in...
Although I am 1 year away.
Yeah, and we've both dabbled in calculus. It's fun to do. I'm going to warn you now, though, that you could find, like, say, let's take the derivative of 4x cubed minus x squared plus 9x minus 5, which, if I remember my numbers correctly, I think I said... What did I say? I don't remember. But that's pretty easy to do. Let's start getting into calculus word problems, though, and you're going to find that those are extremely difficult to do. Most calculus word problems do not have a straightforward solution, which is unfortunate. They tend to be...
How about you try to take the derivative of this? How about you take the derivative of the function y is equal to x to the x to the x in terms of y respect to x?
Yeah.
That's a nightmare if you don't know what the shortcut is.
Yeah, implicit differentiation.
Yep.
That's explicitly defined, but you do have to take the natural log of both sides to start off with, because you can't...
And some people make the mistake of doing e to the x to the x. They use that rule of the exponential rule, which is, you know, the function e to the x, the derivative of e to the x is e to the x. They use that logic to tackle it, but that doesn't work.
That's not really the natural log in this case. That's not quite the same thing.
Right.
You've got the natural log, the derivative of the natural log of x is equal to 1 over x, which is
That's
important
correct.
To realize. So I'll let David finish what he was saying, if there was something else he needed to say on that factor.
Well, I mean, in terms of trying to figure out this interesting implicit differentiation problem, it's like, if you don't know what the shortcut is, you're going to get stuck in that thing, and you're going to take hours trying to figure out that simple but elegant problem.
There's for an example of the implicit differentiation, let's say we have x cubed minus y squared equals, I don't know, 1 million. In truth, the constant here doesn't matter because the derivative of any constant is zero. But what we got to do, grammar is horrible tonight apparently. What we have to do is we've got it in most functions that you'd see, you're going to have y and x explicitly defined, but they aren't here. Sure, we could, you know, figure out that we could get y on one side, we could subtract x squared from both sides, and then we'd take, we'd have to do something. We have this negative y cubed equals negative x squared plus 1 million. You'd have all kinds of fun stuff to do there. The simpler way, though, is just to take the derivative of everything with respect to x. So we have x squared, that's 2x. This is not a calculus lesson, so I'm not going to explain how you find the derivative of x here. But that would be 2x. And then we have, the way this works is we're going to use something called the chain rule. And so...
And that's fun.
Yeah, the chain rule's fun. But if we had, like, let's say we had a function like x to the fifth plus 5x, and that is all to the fourth. You could take that to the fourth, all that to the fourth, and that might not be too difficult. But there are other ways of implementing the chain rule, and they can get pretty complex, and you do need to use it. So in this case...
If you want to learn more about the chain rule, I highly recommend you to go to the Khan Academy site and look at that review on the chain rule. That guy who teaches the chain rule is very good, the way that he explains it.
Sal is excellent. I recommend him to anyone who has an interest in mathematics. He has some very excellent tutorials on mathematics. They're downloadable. So long as you have Flash on your computer, they are playable. And while visuals will help you a lot in some of these problems, they're not necessary. So what we'd end up is we have 2x minus 3y squared, because that's the derivative of y cubed. And since it's with respect to x, we multiply that by dy dx, which is kind of like the derivative of y with respect to x, equals 0. So then what we do is we subtract 2x from both sides. So we have negative 3y squared dy dx equals negative 2x. And we want dy dx on its own. So guess what? We divide by negative 3y squared. So we get it's 2x over 3y squared because the negatives cancel. But you can't really simplify it any more than that. And I know I didn't explain it well, but that wasn't meant to really explain it.
Right.
Just know there's a lot that can happen. And back to our original topic, you know, if you don't know all your signs, it's going to be pretty difficult. You know, you start seeing delta x and the integral of this and the derivative of this. There's all kinds of tricky business that are related to this, and you just have to know it.
That's correct.
Ça c'est correct. And I remember how we got onto this. It was really to a French accent. You have to excuse David and I. We do go on tangents occasionally. This is not meant to be a 100% professional recording, unfortunately. That's correct. That is our attempt, but that doesn't necessarily work.
Mm-hmm.
But just know that there is a lot of Nemeth Braille out there, and there's a lot you're going to see, and if you don't know it, like I said, it is going to come back to haunt you if you don't take the time to learn it. There is something, and it depends on what you have. I happen to have a Braille Note Apex. If you have a Braille Light, I don't know about the Packmates. I don't know if they have this for them, and it'd be very difficult unless you had a Braille display with you. But they do have a Nemeth Code tutorial. Sorry about that. They do have a Nemeth Code tutorial that was produced, and it's 18 chapters, but it's got a lot of information, and it's going to give you most of the Nemeth Code characters, everything from the basic numbers to calculus and complex scientific symbols and all kinds of business. And I have that, actually, and I'm not going to go into that either. That is not what this is about, but it's important that you know it. Is there anything else that you can think of that should be discussed?
I don't think so. So, Hayden, before we wrap this up, let's give out some of the important websites and email addresses for the listeners to use to contact either us or to visit the Khan Academy if they're interested into calculus and all that stuff.
Most definitely.
So, in terms of the Khan Academy, the website address is www.khanacademy, K-H-A-N, and then the word academy,
.org. There you'll see some, it's really one giant page, and there's links to the different parts of the page. You'll see math, you'll see geometry. He does everything from, like, basic addition to differential equations. And that's like got to solve with some derivatives and stuff. That's more way out of the scope of this podcast. But yeah, go check those out. You can find some on YouTube, although it's going to be really hard because there's a lot of material to work through there. You can contact my good self at HD Presley. That's HDPRESLEY at Hotmail. HOTMAIL.com. That is also my messenger.
And you can contact me by typing CHARA569, that's CARA569, at gmail.com.
And I don't know if David will give away his messenger or not.
My messenger is too long in this podcast, so for the time being, I won't give it out.
Okay. Okay. Not very long, actually, but there you go. And I hope everyone has enjoyed this podcast.
And we are sorry if we lost you with our mathematical technical ramblings. So
yeah, it happens. But we do hope that you got the key points that we were trying to get across to you. That is all for this podcast. I hope to be doing more podcasts, maybe with Monsieur Maranatha, maybe by myself. But as for now, this is Monsieur Hayden Presley signing off.
Until next time, ciao.